Okay, welcome everybody to the March 21st, 2021 workshop of Good Meeting Habits and Carrying the Message. And for those of you who would like to, let's start off with a serenity prayer. God, star 6 to unmute. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things
I cannot change, courage to know the difference, thy will be done. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, I'm going to do another mass mute just to make sure the line's quiet. Turn the workshop over to Pamela. There will be questions and answers, so if you do ask a question, please be brief and to the point or a comment. Also, please do not give out any phone numbers. This is being recorded. After the workshop has ended and the recording has stopped, if the panelists would like to leave their contact information, they may at that time. And if there are any sponsors who want to leave their information after the recording has stopped, that's also welcome as well. And with that, I'm now handing the workshop over to Pamela Kay.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Pamela. Good morning, and thank you, Suzanne, for inviting us to be of service today. The subject of this workshop is actually carrying the message at meetings and how we appropriately carry the message at meetings. We all come together, you know, at meetings to share our program of recovery, to see and hear how we work our structured and disciplined program, and how even in adversity it makes our lives better. And the purpose of sharing at meetings is to carry the message that there is recovery from compulsive eating, and this is how recovery works, and this is what it looks like. And there are three components to a share at a meeting, to carrying the message at a meeting, and they are in our format and in our traditions, and they are we give positive shares, and we avoid crosstalk, and we avoid outside issues, and because none of those promote recovery in our program. So I wanted to just briefly talk about the HOW concept, the CEA HOW concept. That's sort of the constitution of CEA HOW, the HOW concept. And of course, we hear it read at every meeting, and often it just becomes the background. But so many basics of our program are addressed in the HOW concept. It's such an important part of our program. And as it says, we see how it's formed to offer a disciplined and structured approach. That is see how. You know, we food folk are very fortunate, I always believe, in that there are many 12-step food programs. And each of them follows the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, but have different basic procedures and ways in which we follow them. And I think all of the 12-step food programs work. You know, they all work. It's just a matter of finding the one that I'm willing to work, and that works for me. And the food program that I'm willing to work and that works for me is Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HOW. And the HOW, yes, does stand for honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, but really it is the HOW concept. Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, the HOW concept. That is the name of our fellowship. And we've just shortened the HOW concept to HOW. So that is how important the HOW concept is. We're a disciplined and structured approach. That is this program. And, you know, if I find the discipline and the structure too onerous, I have other choices. But for me, it gives me freedom and comfort. So that's why I'm here. And the See How concept also says, the See How plan of eating, the steps, traditions, and tools of recovery are not suggested. Rather, we accept them as requirements for our recovery. And, of course, you know, the third tradition says that the only requirement is a desire to stop eating compulsively, and that is true. But if I want to recover, I'm going to do the steps, the traditions, the tools, and the concepts of service. And I do want to recover. So I just feel that attention to the CEA HOW concept is really basic to my recovery and certainly to this fellowship as a whole, to keep this fellowship as it was implemented as a disciplined and structured approach. Also, there's so much information on our website that I hope people go to. Just, you can just go and noodle around on the website and you'll see a lot of really great things. One of the things I'm going to refer to today is called Best Practices for Strong Meetings. And, of course, that's sort of the subject of this workshop. And this document is on the website. It's under the second tab, Meetings. In the drop-down menu, it's under Meeting Assistance. And it's Best Practices for Strong Meetings. Some of the things in this document are: the primary purpose of a CEHOW meeting is to carry the message of CEHOW recovery. Therefore, no other 12-step fellowships, literature, or recovery facilities are mentioned during the meeting. And, it's a sponsor's responsibility. I was taught that not only does a sponsor sponsor me in the steps, the traditions, the tools, which includes our food plan, and the concepts of service, but my sponsor also guides me in CEHOW etiquette. What is appropriate to share at meetings, what is not appropriate to share at meetings. And I value that guidance. I had no idea when I came in what was appropriate, what was not appropriate, what helped the fellowship and what did not. And there are three issues to keep in mind. I think anytime I share, there are three questions I should be asking myself. One, am I sharing my own experience, strength, and hope? And two, is my share strengthening the unity of this group? And three, does my share help newcomers and those struggling? And that's something to always, always, always I have to keep in mind. If I were a newcomer sitting in this room and I heard this share, how would it affect me? Would I want to become part of this program, this life-saving program, or would I think, oh, I don't like that? So I always need to keep in mind the newcomer and the person struggling. Also, we are a 12-step program, a spiritual program of action. We're not a diet club, and we're not a support group. So that's why we share our own experience, strength, and hope at meetings, and that's why we avoid crosstalk for the safety of everyone. And we certainly support each other, but that's outside the meeting. We don't support each other one-on-one. We support each other one-on-one outside the meetings by sponsoring, by outreach calls, by fellowship. In the meeting, we allow everyone anonymity and dignity. We don't comment on another share, but we'll get into that more later. So there are, best practices. Another item under best practices, and I do hope everyone will take a minute to look at this document because it's for the good of the fellowship, and it's all about, recovery is all about ego reduction. It's not about me, it's about the program. So this helps me focus on the program. And another item is to assure the safety and comfort of all members, it's the responsibility of the meeting leader or secretary to ensure that the CEHOW guidelines are followed during the meeting and that the meeting format is adhered to. Timing and leads and pitches is followed. The group's crosstalk guideline is followed. No outside issues are raised. Members are respectful, and there are no distractions from within or without the group. The document also says crosstalk as defined by the group conscience, and we'll get into that more later when we talk specifically about crosstalk. Crosstalk is not practiced. The last thing that is really important in the best practices of strong meetings is to follow the traditions, And that's why in our sponsor guidelines, the delegates at World Service Business Conference a few years ago added to the sponsor guidelines that once we complete our first 30 questions, once we complete our inventory, once we complete all 12 steps, we either go on to the maintenance questions, or if we're not yet at maintenance, we go to the traditions study guide. And if we do go right on to maintenance, then once we complete maintenance, we do the 12 traditions study guide. So those are our five basic question books. Once we complete those five basic question books, then we together with our sponsors, can write on any of the other millions of question books we have. So, but the purpose of the 12 traditions study guide as a requirement in the questions that we answer is, again, for the safety of the group, you know, for the safety of the group. So with that said, I would like to introduce our first panelists. Again, our three topics are, the first topic is positive pitches, and Pam H. from Area 1 is going to share with us about positive pitches. Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Pamela. I'm really happy to be here today. I just would like to qualify. I've been in the CHOW program for almost 22 years. My current abstinence is from April 21st of 2014. I'm a full-service sponsor, and I have a weight loss of over 200 pounds. That was not my own doing, but that of my higher power and the group collectively, and working the program the way it's written. And I'm just so happy to share today about positive shares, because I think it's really helpful in meetings to know, you know, what we should say and what we shouldn't say, but not, you know, I mean, to be ourselves, but to be comfortable with, you know, whatever the, you know, the basic concepts are to, in order to do that. And all of that is, you know, I think Pamela touched on a little bit, to strengthen the unity among us, to help newcomers and those that are struggling, and to share our own experience, strength, and hope, and not that of anybody else, okay? To give you, I want to start by saying that my first experience with a 12-step program was just another 12-step program that doesn't have to be mentioned, but I walked into the rooms. I was, you know, I was a different person there then. I was full of anger and negativity and blaming everybody else for my situation. But when I went, the first person that pitched in the room was talked very much from a position of being a saved Christian, and talked a lot about Jesus, and I was really turned off by her. It was like proselytizing to me, and I take responsibility for the fact of, you know, how I took that, but I know that in our own rooms, I'm so appreciative when people talk about their higher power, whatever that is. I know there are a lot of people in the rooms that are come from all kinds of different backgrounds, atheists and Islamic people and, you know, study Islam and Christians and Jews. And so it's hard to identify with a pitch that doesn't fit our picture of a higher power. So if you just say higher power, I think that's a wonderful start. And that's what I learned from that particular person that day. But it also kept me away from 12 steps for a long time, because that's what I thought it was. And it scared me. And, you know, fear is a strange thing. But what brought me back was the misery that I lived in. And I had given up dieting. I didn't ever want to diet again. And I was in therapy, and my therapist suggested CHOW. And I decided, okay, I'll give it a shot, but I know it won't work. One more diet. And I came into the room, and the first night I heard the speaker talk about the fact that he had lost 100 pounds. And he was a very positive guy, and he was, you know, and he said, you know, for the newcomers in the room, give us 30 days and do the program the way it's written, and if you don't like it, we'll give you your life back. And I thought, aha, I'll prove that, this doesn't work. But in about day 24, somebody said to me, who didn't know I was in program, I hadn't told anybody, said, you know, Pam, you seem so much happier. And I was. And so I stayed, and I stayed, I came for the vanity. Staying for the sanity is, it took a long time for my sanity to reach me, and I'm not sure I'm there yet, but I keep working it, But the reason that I do that is because it's changing my life. Every day my life gets better. I am so much more a positive person who lives more in gratitude than I do in negativity and anger. And particularly in this time of the pandemic, when a lot of us are very lonely and feeling alone, and it's so wonderful to have a group that we can turn to, and you can make an outreach call, you can go to the meetings on Zoom, that kind of thing, and you can listen to people talk about their experience, strength, and hope, and how they have overcome things that have stopped them in their tracks, and then they were able to pull it together and not eat over it, and how they did that. And that's what I want to hear in the meetings, is how you overcome different issues in your life, and also how grateful you are for what you found here. Okay, so now I started struggling after 5 years of abstinence, and I got some, I got some abstinence, and then I fell back and all that kind of stuff. But I never left the rooms. I kept my butt in the chair because I knew that CHAL was where I was going to find the answer. I knew it wasn't anywhere else out there. There was no other program I wanted to try. I knew in my heart that this program works if you work it. And I spent a lot of years in meetings, not being abstinent, and just gritting my teeth and hoping that I would hear what I needed to hear. And I have to tell you that one day, and I don't know what what it was about this woman, but there was a lady sitting in my home meeting that I go to every Saturday morning. I've never seen her before. I've never seen her since. I call her my angel, and I get emotional over her. But she was a person who said she had struggled in OA. She had come to CHAL. She had some struggles in CHAL, but she realized that if you think it's hard being abstinent, try not being abstinent and see how much harder that is. And I realized that was so much the truth. I was struggling, and it was so hard, and all I had to do was do the program, And that day I got a sponsor, and I got abstinent. And it was just what that lady said to me that made the difference. And that's what I want to be for other people in our program that are struggling, is I want to be able to help them. I want to be able to have the newcomers hear that, I lost, 200 pounds, if that's their issue. Or even if you have 10 pounds, I always say the first 10 pounds and the last 10 pounds are the hardest. So it doesn't matter how much you have to lose. But when you are over 100 pounds overweight, and you come in and you hear that someone lost 200 pounds and kept it off, that's something that, perks your attention. So I want people to hear that. And I also want people to hear that if you're struggling, stick around, because the miracle is here if you wait for it to happen. And that's what I did. So as far as pitches in the room go, I want to tell you some of the things that kind of drive me crazy. And that is, we talk about no food pitches in the meeting. And then you hear somebody share, and they you know, we know what abstinent food looks like. You don't have to say, well, I was at this birthday party, and they had this round thing, and it had the candles in it, and the blah, 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 blah. You know, we all know what that looks like, and you don't have to tell us what's at a birthday party. We've been there and eaten it all, okay? But, you know, tell us that, you know, you went to a party and there was non-abstinent food, and how did you make it through that without, you know, losing your abstinence? Also, you know, I think it's important to talk about how you're working the program, not how you're not working the program. I've heard people in the meetings, you know, there's newcomers in the room, and they'll say, well, I don't really make all the phone calls, and I don't, you know, I don't do the writing every day, and I don't do X, Y, or Z, but, you know, I'm abstinent, and I've been in the program a long time. Well, that sets someone up to fail if they're a newcomer, you know. And what I found, I mean, there have been times in my life when I haven't done the writing all the time and I haven't made all the phone calls and I haven't, you know, done the program exactly the way it's written. And you know what? I spent a lot of time not being abstinent as a result. And now I'm in this program, and when I do a pitch, I tell them what works. And what works is, for me, I had to identify a higher power that worked for me. And whatever that looks like for you is fine. And I had to work the program, all the tools, not some of them. And, you know, I realized that one of the reasons that I struggled with abstinence for all those years was that I didn't have a strong enough connection to my higher power. I had the two legs of the stool. I had the food down. You know, I had the emotional part down from years of therapy. I had the physical part down. I'd lost all this weight, but I had a very weak structure in as far as higher power goes, and I had to strengthen that because it's like the third leg of a stool. You know, and so that's what I talk about in program two, is how all three parts are very important. Whatever it looks like to you is okay, but you have to work it from that position and work all of the tools all of the time. And so I hope that this has given you something to think about and to take away from you know, what I'm saying is, it's, you know, one thing that a person says in a meeting can, you know, depending on where you are in your abstinence, can really hurt you or help you. And I always want to be the person that's in a positive place with gratitude instead of in that angry place and in the negative place. And so I'm hoping that has helped you today in your abstinence. So I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Pamela.
Thanks, Pam. And Robert, are you on?
Hi, welcome everybody.
Yay. Oh, yay. Hey, okay. All right. Robert, do you have anything to add to regarding positive pitches? Anything to add to what Pam has shared with us?
You know, I loved the whole share because it is, look, here's the thing. Life is hard. Addiction is hard. Our addiction is difficult. And to be in a room where someone's sharing their experience, strength, and hope in a positive way is an amazing thing. And I love where you said, look, here, a share is not for you to share how you're not working your program. That's such an important thing to remember. And for everyone that's listening and wants to be better at your shares in these meetings and more impactful for yourself and for others and certainly for the newcomers, I would say right now get a pen and paper and just write notes. This is one of the most invaluable things I ever do in a meeting, is to walk in with a pen and my journal, because when I listen to a speaker, and I want to share, I always write down little points that I've heard that really resonate with me, and it helps my share in a meeting. But so far as a positive pitch, it's so important that we remember that, look, a positive pitch is not all flowers and roses and sunshine. I get that, because we are all living lives, and some of us don't live easy lives, and certainly not with our addiction. So you can share about difficulties, but as long as it has those elements of our experience, strength, and hope in this program, in this addiction, in working with our food and how we do our steps and seven traditions, you know, that's the most important thing, because we are in those meetings for service. If you don't remember that, we are all in those meetings giving service and receiving service. It's the only way we survive. So you have to remember, when you open your mouth as a speaker, as a leader, or as someone sharing for 3 minutes in a 3-minute positive pitch, we're giving service to ourselves and the newcomer and the people that are still struggling in that meeting. And that's it. That's why the structure of our program is so amazing. As Pamela has told you, that there's so many other programs out there that don't have our structure. And the reason why it works for me and why I've chosen this particular program is because I know in myself that I need that structure. And to hear a positive pitch is a lifesaver for me in those meetings. And that's what I got out of that. So thanks, Pam. Really amazing.
Thanks, Robert. And yeah, and I too think that one of the most important things, a positive pitch, is that we do share how this program works for us and how we work this program, not how we don't work this program. You know, we may think we're being humble by talking about how we're not perfect, you know, as though we need to tell anybody we're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But that's not... You know, that's not humility. That's kind of being selfish, saying, I don't do this, I don't do that, because somebody is sitting there in that room thinking, oh, good, I guess I don't have to really work this program the way it's written, you know? So it's not a confessional. Sharing is not a confessional. We can share that stuff with our sponsor, we can share it with our fellows, but not at meeting level. And one of the things I was taught, and then we'll move on to questions or comments, one of the things I was taught is that I take my mess to my sponsor, I take my message to the meeting. So I take my problems to my sponsor, we work on solutions, things to do about it. I can then share that at the meeting. I'm going through this really tough time, and as we've heard, you know, a positive share doesn't mean all Pollyanna business. I'm going through this really tough time and blah, 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 and not, but I didn't eat over it. That is not a positive share necessarily, but what did I do about it? And I went through this really difficult time, and I was able to do this, 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 and this. And that is a positive share. So we'd like to hear from you. Does anybody have any questions, comments, want to share your experience? We'll take about 10 minutes.
This is Paul from New York. When you're ready,
Adele, too.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention, and it does become an issue for me sometimes at meetings, when people want to embellish the speaker with all this praise, and I just heard it briefly as one commented on one else, you know, the first speaker, in which I liked what I heard. Can we just get a feedback on what you feel is, you know, particularly an opportunity for all of us to hear, so that it doesn't become a positive crosstalk when people embellish, you know, the person that shared, you knocked it out of the park, and blah, blah, blah. I just wanted to just see if we could have some more feedback on that. When somebody does share, that somebody then will then kind of go into the crosstalk, or just maybe put out too much towards the other person's share.
Right. That's a very good subject. And in fact, this workshop covers three areas. The second area is crosstalk, so we will get into that in the crosstalk portion of this. Thanks so much. Adele?
Oh, okay, I think my mic fall up on the crosstalk. Sure. I'll just say it real quick. What happened, I know the secretary of the leader post said, you know, called a personal crosstalk, but sometimes they don't tend to do that, and then, you know, the next person crosstalk, and it just become a, you know, a running thing. So I don't know who's supposed to, you know, say anything if the leader don't say anything.
Right. We're gonna cover that in the second part of this workshop, which is about crosstalk. Thank you.
Okay, this is Suzanne. I'd like to ask the opinion or your experience, strength, and hope of the panel. I've had sponsees or friends that say, I need to pitch because a lot of negative stuff is going on, and I don't feel that I can share safely at a meeting. And I always say, you know, share briefly what the problem is, but what is the solution? But how would you guide your sponsees on this the meeting in a positive manner, but also allowing the person to share what they think they need to share? Thank you.
This is Pamela, and as I said, I was taught to take my mess to my sponsor and my message to the meeting. So, and the second thing about sharing, positive sharing, is I was also taught that not everything is appropriate at meeting level. There are some shares that are appropriate at sponsor level, some issues appropriate for outreach calls, for fellowship. Not all issues are appropriate at meeting level. So if it were my sponsee, we would talk about it, and often I encourage them to share about something at a meeting if it is a positive pitch, if it will be useful to them and to the meeting. But we have any number of avenues to share in CEA How. We are required to share our brains out. It's not just at a meeting. A meeting isn't necessarily the place to do that. We share every day with our sponsor. We share every day in outreach calls. We share in fellowship. So we have ample opportunity to share issues that may not necessarily be appropriate at meeting level. Do either of Pam or Robert want to address that?
That's what I was going to say, is that when you arrive at a solution to whatever the problem is, that's the time to share it in the meeting. If you're struggling with something and you have to get this out, well, get it out with your sponsor, get it out with your outreach calls, get it out with fellowship with other CEHAlians. But in the meeting room, we want to hear, what did you do? What did you finally do that created a positive outcome? Or would be able to strengthen someone else's program for how you did it. That's my point of view. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, this is Robert. I just wanted to reiterate that you know the I need to do a pitch at a meeting to get this negative stuff out is not the place, right? So you start at your sponsor and you share it with your sponsor and see if it's appropriate to share something, and maybe you restructure the way you wanted to share it. Because maybe it would bring some value, but you have to, you know, it sort of has to be in the realm of, is this going to help? We have to go back to those questions. Am I sharing my experience, strength, and hope? Does my share strengthen the unity of this group, CEA How, no other group, not Al-Anon, not AA, not therapy, not any other group but CEA How? And does my share help newcomers and those still struggling? Or does it just help me? You know, you have to look at what part of my share is helping anyone in these rooms, or is it just for me to get it off my chest because I'm checking in? That is not a 3-minute positive pitch. So it really comes down to you and your sponsor and fellowship. And like Pamela or the Pams, have said. you know, we have so many outlets to ask questions and to get it right before we enter those rooms. Because, you know, those meetings, for me, are very sacred and very much the reason why I'm alive today. So those are important rooms. We're not just walking in there to whatever. Those are important rooms, and the people sitting in those seats for me are so important, and certainly the newcomers and the people struggling. I've been in it 13 years. I have moments of struggle, but I'm there because I know it works, and I love it, and it's a part of my life. So when I share my experience, strength, and hope. And if I have something that's bothering me, I don't necessarily share it unless it's truly clear to my food addiction and the people struggling with the same thing in that room. And that's it. Did that help at all?
Thanks, Robert. Are there any other questions or comments or experiences that anybody would like to share before we move to the next portion of the workshop?
Hi, this is Linda M., and I have, I think, a multiple of questions. So this past year has been an extraordinarily peculiar year, and a lot of fears come up with a lot of people. And there have been times where people have done kind of a because of this, and this is how I've utilized the tools or steps, whatever, to overcome it. So the situations might be something like, because of the protest, because I'm locked at home, I can't get to the store, I don't know what to do, I can't talk with other people. And then, you know, and so this is how I, you know, overcame it by utilizing the program. But even just bringing up that, you know, maybe 30 seconds of, I'm terrified and I don't know what to do. And with PhoneBridge, it's very different from, you know, we don't have the benefit of having either a sponsor right there to, like, hold my hand and go, no, don't share this. You know, or, you know, hearing other people, you know, like overhearing or having that chit-chat after the meeting where everybody's just standing around and putting away chairs or whatever. We don't have that. So I don't know if you wanted to comment on that kind of part. And then also, do you have any languaging of what to do? It's on the phone bridge, you know, if I have to bust in and as a leader and say, I'm sorry, that's crosstalk, or can you please keep it positive? Sometimes then there's just a roller coaster of other people, you know, the next sharing going, you know, you know, don't cut people off and how dare you. And so it's a tough thing. Okay, that's all.
Hey, yeah. Linda, go ahead.
Yeah, those are great comments. The second part of it, again, we're talking about crosstalk and outside issues, and those are two of the topics we're going to be dealing with, so we'll go into those in detail. The first part about I'm terrified because of protests, because of the pandemic, because of blah, blah. Again, there are meeting-level shares, and we have ample opportunity to share, whether it's phone bridge, in the rooms. Nobody's in the rooms these days, but it's almost all done by phone or by Zoom, and we can share all of that. And I think an appropriate share in the rooms is, I'm having a really difficult time, this is what I'm doing, not I'm having a difficult time because of, and naming specific things, because as soon as we name specific things, you know, people are divided about the weather. So we want to focus on unity of the group. So again, I think we have ample opportunity to share the specifics outside of the rooms, and then we'll talk about crosstalk and outside issues when we get to those topics. Robert, you
and also some people want to wallow they want to be a victim, okay? And I hear victim in that, oh, I can't go to the store and there's nobody to shop for me and I'm at home and I'm going to eat over it, you know. but I don't want to eat over it. So So what am I going to do? And if you can come up, you know, if you say, you know, this is what I'm afraid of, but this is what I'm going to do. You know, there is Uber Eats. There is all kinds of way to get food to you, you know. And I don't, you know, I'm not buying victim stories these days. You know, when I hear victim, I go into persecutor.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with everybody. So, yeah, that's
this
why
is
I keep
Cheryl
it positive.
Lance there?
Right. Can I, hey, this is Robert, one of the panelists. So here's the other thing about our program, the beautiful thing about our program and the gift that we have in our program is, and what you're talking about, yes, it's been a tough year for a lot of people. It definitely has. But what we have built into this program is this structure that it's not suggestions that we have to follow. We have a structure of 7 tools, and this is why we have them. Because, you know, inherently, and Pam and I have had many talks about this, how for a lot of us, we're a reclusive bunch. We're so used to being in the dark, eating our brains out. So, you know, now that we're not in the dark eating our brains out, we have to do a structure that keeps us out of the dark eating our brains out. We have 3 phone calls a day, 3 to people that need our help, possibly, and 1 to our sponsor. That is a huge gift. So when things are feeling tough, you can make more than 3 phone calls. Right, and get advice from people that are afraid as well, and doing the do. You know, there are ways to get out there and not shop for food. Because I understand some people are of certain ages that don't want to be in a pandemic kind of a situation. But there are different hours for people to shop. There are just tools that we have built into this program that keep us from those fears. So now that we're doing this program, CEA How, with our 12 steps and 7 tools, we have that to help us through. So if someone's feeling those fears and feeling weird about doing things during this weird time, that's what those, we have to buckle down and really get into those 7 tools and use them more than ever. And get out there and talk more to fellows.
Excuse me, this is the timer. We do need to move on to the next speaker.
Right. Thanks, Ellie. I was just going to say that. Thank you. So thank you. If anybody had anything they wanted to say, hold that thought, and if we have time at the end, we will address it, or it may be appropriate for one of the other topics in this meeting. Now, the second topic on how to carry the message at a meeting is crosstalk, and the third topic is outside issues. So crosstalk, and my name is Pamela. I'm the one of the 3 panelists who is addressing crosstalk. And to qualify briefly, I have been in the program an abstinent for 26 years, 10 months, 26 days. And I'm sponsoring on all levels. My abstinence date is April 25, 1994. And I've been maintaining a 75-pound weight loss for over 25 years. And I was just talking with someone this morning about, gosh, you know, it's sometimes I hear something and I think, I hear somebody share about something and I'm thinking, oh, that's strange. And then I think I thought the same thing at that point in time. So I think we forget sometimes how we have changed. And the whole point of recovery to me is change. It's all about change, changing. You know, it's food is only mentioned in the first half of the 12 steps. You know, all the rest of it is about changing who I am. And if I didn't change the person that brought me into these rooms, that person will take me out of these rooms. So it's all about the structure and the discipline of this program. And I personally have gotten so much freedom from the structure and the discipline of this program. All it does is give me freedom. And the traditions, I wanted to just talk about the traditions in crosstalk. Tradition 1 and Tradition 5 are especially relevant to crosstalk. Tradition 1 is basically about unity, the unity of the group, and crosstalk divides the group. Outside issues divides the group. So Tradition 1 is so critical, the unity. And then Tradition 5, also singleness of purpose. As we've heard from the panelists, we're all food addicts. Not all of us belong in other programs, although many of us are in other programs. But we don't bring that into CEA How because that divides us. You know, as soon as I say I'm also in blah blah, then as has been pointed out, and as Robert will talk about more with outside issues, you know, then pretty soon the next person says, I'm in blah blah too, and that divides us. You know, we're then not all here because we're compulsive eaters, which we are. And I've heard, you know, about the traditions and the steps. I've heard that the steps, we follow the steps to prevent us from suicide, and we follow the traditions to prevent us from homicide. And we follow the 12 concepts of service to prevent us from genocide. So steps, traditions, and concepts of service are all critical to our common welfare, which is what this is all about. So crosstalk. I want to give you a couple examples of how I personally have suffered from crosstalk. First let me just give a definition of crosstalk. Let me tell you that, on our website, which contains so much valuable information, under meetings, the second tab, under meeting assistance, there is a document called Crosstalk, which gives a lot of valuable information about what crosstalk is. And it says, in 12-step programs, the term crosstalk is used to describe various forms of interference in meetings, and that's basically distraction. The only appropriate comment about anyone's share, a speaker's or another member's, is thank you for your share. And as we heard earlier, you know, a meeting is not a support group. It's not, oh, you're so wonderful, and it's not a roast. I don't spend my share talking about someone else, either negatively or positively, because that is crosstalk. It's just thank you for your share. And then in my share, again, keeping in mind those three important things in a share, am I sharing my own experience, strength, and hope? Does my share strengthen the unity of the group? And does my share help a newcomer or someone struggling? So that's what I share about. I don't share about the leader. I don't share about someone else. I share about my own experience, strength, and hope. And I can say there was a reference this morning about blah blah, and that makes me think of, you know, that's okay. And any form of crosstalk also, the crosstalk document says, any form of interruption, remarks, side conversations, these, of course, are in the rooms, laughter, and again, on the phone bridge, these things don't occur so much, excuse me, but they're distractions, if you're on a Zoom meeting, in the rooms, or, again, the phone bridge doesn't have this much of an issue on this, and any advice given during a meeting, whether asked for or not, is crosstalk. If advice is requested, you know, people can share one-on-one. And that's the thing. Anytime I use another person's name in my share, I'm making it a two-person meeting. I'm making it a meeting between me and you, and everybody else is excluded. Anytime you use someone's name in a meeting, I'm excluded. And the purpose of the meeting is unity, and that we're all here for each other. So I don't want to make the meeting divided, and I don't want to exclude anybody. You know, our co-founder, Fred S., always said that we were an inclusive fellowship. CEA How is an inclusive fellowship.
And he was referring specifically to our 7-day abstinence requirement, actually, because often people say, oh, I feel so excluded. I can't share in a meeting because I don't have 7 days. Well, you know, as we've heard this morning, if we work this program, we're required to share our brains out all the time. And the reason we're an inclusive program is that we include recovery in our meetings. And as we heard earlier, I don't need to hear about the round thing with the candles. I know all about that. I don't need to hear about the misery of compulsive eating, either under-eating, overeating, binging, purging. I know all about that. That's why, A, we have the 7-day abstinence requirement, and B, we do positive pitches. So back to crosstalk. Other issues in the crosstalk document is we need to feel safe about expressing our experience, strength, and hope without fear of direct or indirect response. For many members, these rooms are the first place we have felt safe speaking about our experience. And that is so true, and I think it's especially true for us compulsive eaters among the 12-step fellowships, because many, many of us had obese childhoods, and maybe we were bullied, maybe we were excluded, and this is the one place where we should never feel excluded. So we don't offer advice, we don't comment on another person's share. We don't judge. You know, we may be judgmental folk, but we keep it to ourselves, and that's one of the many areas that we may be working on. But we don't express it at a meeting. Meetings are places of safety, where again, for many of us, it's the very first place in our lives that we have felt safe to share some of these things, and that's why we don't crosstalk. We don't comment. You may misinterpret what I said. That happens often. You know, somebody will say, when Pamela shared about this, you know, I feel so sorry for her because I remember that. And maybe whatever I shared had absolutely nothing to do with what you heard. So we don't crosstalk in that way either. And one thing that I've learned over time, I know in the past, in earlier years, I might want to share something at a meeting, some idea, some thought, and that I'd been talking about perhaps with a sponsee. And I would say, I was talking with a sponsee recently, and we thought about, and I thought I was protecting that sponsee's anonymity and not cross-talking by not using the name. On the other hand, a lot of people know who my sponsees are. And so that was breaking anonymity, and that was cross-talk. So, and I didn't realize that, you know, for a long time. And then I realized it was crosstalk. And so then I can say I was talking with someone and we were talking about blah, blah. And that is protecting anonymity. And that is not crosstalk. Let's see what else this says. And then crosstalk can break a person's anonymity by introducing information not mentioned in the person's share, revealing relationships outside the meeting. And I have heard this. I've heard people in shares say, I came to these rooms through my friend. We were at our AA meeting, and I asked her what she was doing, and blah, blah, blah. And my friend Allison, say, and we were at our AA meeting, and I asked her what she was doing, why she lost so much weight, and she told me. So I have broken Allison's anonymity about another fellowship. So I have to be really careful about that. Or Allison and I were go to the same therapist, so, you know, all of that stuff is breaking others' anonymity, and that is crosstalk. And again, that feeling of safety is so critical for all of us in the room. Let me give you some examples too of experiences that I had in crosstalk. Very early on, I was sharing at a meeting, and it was very difficult to share. You know, I had no idea what to share. I was just there to lose weight. Let's face facts, kids. And and I was trying to do the stuff, but, you know, I mean, it was new. We're all new. We all need to learn. And I had had some experience I think I'd gone out to dinner with my husband and some friends, and I don't know, something happened, nothing bad, but I remember thinking, oh, I handled that differently because I'm in recovery, and I was so proud of myself. And so I actually got up at a meeting to share that, and I was sharing that experience, and I was saying, and what I learned from this was, whatever it was, and there was a person sitting, this is in the room, and there was a person sitting there, and she got this look of horror on her face, and she opened her mouth, and she just vehemently shook her head, no. And I was just mortified that I had gotten the wrong thing from that experience, and that my share was that I was wrong, basically that I was wrong. And that was crosstalk. She didn't say a word, but that was definitely crosstalk. And so there are many, many ways that we can impinge on someone else's safety through judgment. And another experience is my first sponsor was an actor and a stand-up comedian, and her shares were often very, very entertaining, heartfelt, but very entertaining. And I remember her telling me once that there was somebody who always attended the same meetings, and after one of the meetings, he came up to her and he said, I just always love when you share because you're always so entertaining. And she, to her, that was really hard to hear, because she felt then that she could not get up and really share from the heart. She had to be entertaining. So that may have been a positive comment, but it was crosstalk. And it was a comment on her share, and it was a judgment on her share, even though a positive judgment. But it then took away her freedom. It took away her safety, to say whatever she needed to say. And so that too is another example of crosstalk. And then, as I said, when I use someone else's, or you use someone else's name in a meeting, say, when you said this, Allison, then I feel left out. It becomes a two-person meeting, and I'm no longer part of it. It's between you and Allison. So that's another reason we don't crosstalk. Many meeting formats have crosstalk guidelines, and this is up, in my experience, this is up to an individual meeting to have a group conscience to determine what that meeting's crosstalk guidelines are. And somebody had asked about how we all maintain these guidelines. And my experience is that whoever is in charge of the meeting, and different meetings have different structures, but whether it's the leader or the secretary, that person's position is not a position of authority. That person's position is as a trusted servant. You are a trusted servant of the group, or I am a trusted servant of the group, and my responsibility is to the group. It's not, oh, I am the authority, and this is what it says. My responsibility is to the group. And so if I am trusted with the service of being the secretary or the leader, my responsibility is to maintain the guidelines of the group, the see-how guidelines. And my responsibility is to point out an outside issue. My responsibility is to point out crosstalk. My responsibility is, or if I'm a timekeeper, it's not about me having authority and being embarrassed to interrupt you. My service is to the group. I am a trusted servant to the group, and the group is trusting me to be the timekeeper. And the group is trusting me to ensure that the meeting follows the see-how guidelines. So we all say that recovery is a program of ego reduction. And so it's not about me. The service positions are not positions of authority. They're positions as trusted servants. And that's why we rotate them, to give everybody a chance to be a trusted servant. Meetings have group consciences to determine their crosstalk guidelines. And I'm just going to read you three. And so we suggest, for the safety of the group, for your safety, that each meeting adapt crosstalk guidelines. And here are three examples. Crosstalk during a meeting refers to expressing a compliment, commenting on another's share, any form of disruption, advice giving, or speaking directly to another person rather than to the group. Sharing our own experience, strength, and hope, and avoiding crosstalk frees us from worry about negative or positive judgment. And, you know, isn't there a lot of safety in that? I just love that. And here's another example. This meeting's group conscience regarding crosstalk is, please realize that feedback, whether positive or negative, to another member's sharing, mentioning the name of another member in your pitch, or any form of interruption while a member is sharing is considered crosstalk. Avoiding crosstalk.
2 minutes left.
Thanks, Ellie. Avoiding crosstalk helps to guarantee safety in our meetings, protect privacy, and ensure anonymity for all of us. And I love that. Avoiding crosstalk helps to guarantee safety in our meetings, protect privacy, and ensure anonymity for all of us. And then quickly, the third example is, we ask that no one give advice, and please, no crosstalk. And of course, crosstalk, we go, what do you mean no crosstalk? And then we go on to define it. Crosstalk during a meeting refers to expressing a compliment, commenting on another's share, any form of disruption, advice giving, or speaking directly to another person rather than to the group. Sharing our own experience, strength, and hope, and avoiding crosstalk frees us from worry about negative or positive judgment. We further ask that those who share keep to the subject at hand, avoiding outside issues such as religious creeds and other 12-step programs, except in passing, or outside literature or philosophies. Remain positive by offering experience, strength, and hope as it relates to CEA How. So those are all examples that your particular meeting can hold a business meeting and develop your own guidelines for crosstalk, because it protects you. It protects you, and it protects the newcomer, and it protects anyone struggling. So, Pam or Robert, do you have any comments you'd like to add about crosstalk?
Sure. that was a lot. My God, I probably crosstalk every day. Oh, that was, I'm going to have to, thank God I printed this out. Here's the thing. There's a lot of things that can fall under crosstalk, and it is sometimes when you hear it like that, overwhelming. But let's just remember what, and maybe we all need to just write it down and remember this for our shares, is, am I sharing my own experience, strength, and hope? That will keep us safe. And also I wrote down simplify. You know, I think we all just want to have a great share and help, but really what it comes down to is just simplify what you're sharing. There's nothing wrong with that. I've gotten so much. What's that?
Was that a judgment?
Absolutely it is. No. you know, I think every meeting is so different, too. I've been to so many meetings where there are different egregious things happening, and it always happens at certain meetings. So what we're saying is, yeah, we all have a group conscience that we can do for our own meetings so far as crosstalk goes. If you notice something, you can raise your hand and get a specific meeting done for that, so that you can make that better for you in that meeting, because these meetings are for you. And if something's not working, you can get a, what do they call, I'm going blank on, you call to order a meeting in 2 weeks on an issue.
Meeting. Yeah, a business meeting to take a group.
Yeah, it's a business meeting to go over maybe something that can be added to your crosstalk rule. But yes, you know, this is also why we have the 7-day rule for newcomers, that we are teaching and we are helping a person struggling to learn how to share properly.
2 minutes.
So they discuss it with their sponsor. That's a huge gift. And then it continues after that. I've talked many times with Pamela over my program and how I share and what I've seen in meetings. So, you know, it's something that you can work on crosstalk with your sponsor. Pam?
Thanks. Thanks,
yeah,
Robert. Pam?
You know, I know that at one point in our meeting, we had a business meeting, someone brought up the fact, brought up about crosstalk, and we put something in our literature about crosstalk, and it didn't seem to make a huge amount of difference, as I noticed, because there's still a lot of crosstalk. But one of the things I personally took away from it that was really helpful is when a speaker said something that really called out to me and I wanted to comment on it, and I know that you can't comment that. When I did my pitch, I would say, you know, this morning I was reminded that, and I can paraphrase
right.
what the leader said. And that's not crosstalk because it's coming from me, not from the leader then. And so that's, you know, that's an easy fix for me, you know, that worked. And, but as, you know, it's, you know, I still hear it all the time in the meetings, and if I have a sponsee that does it, I try to remember and talk to her about it when we talk. But it is a difficult one, and it needs to be brought up again and again and again, because I think it gets lost in the weeds somehow, and it can make you feel uncomfortable. It can make a newcomer not want to ever pitch because the leader was so good, and everybody was going, "Oh, your talk was so wonderful, and I got so much out of it," and blah blah blah. And then you think, "Boy, I could never do that good, so I'm never gonna step up." You know, if you're new, so it's really important, you know, to
That's exactly right. And the whole thing again, it all comes back to safety. We feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think on the last subject, Paul had brought up something about crosstalk, and I wanted to hit him again with this. You know, if someone is crosstalking, a secretary, and I've asked this many times when I've spoken with Pamela too and other fellows that can't we just stop them and just stop their share? Can't the secretary say, "Hey, that's crosstalk"? You can't.
Well, and that's one of the, Robert, let me just say this. That's one of the reasons that we develop crosstalk guidelines for the meeting,
right.
Because then it's not just me saying that's crosstalk,
right.
But it's our guidelines specifically state this. It's then the
right.
guidelines. It's principles, not personalities.
Right. So, unfortunately, we have to listen to the pitch, and then, yes, the secretary can mention again, we have certain guidelines, and I'd love us to, you know, the secretary can, after the pitch, say something
Step
to
in.
The effect,
yeah.
or reread, maybe, the guidelines of crosstalk, and let's just be vigilant of that.
Yeah,
and that
I
way
think rereading them is good.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, you know, it's we're not into embarrassing someone that's pitching, because we all make mistakes, and we all are going to fall into a little crosstalk every now and again. But what I also wrote down is, let's all be an example for ourselves, because one major wonderful part of our program is to work our side of the street. So if you hear someone doing crosstalk, work on yourself. Work on not crosstalking, and go to the website, print out this stuff, and do a better pitch next time for yourself. And that will be an example to someone else, maybe the person that was crosstalking, of how to really get an impactful pitch. You know.
1 minute left.
That's it.
Thank you.
That's what I wanted to share.
Okay, thanks. And, okay, excellent. So, let's move on then to the third topic of how to carry the message at a meeting. Again, the first was positive pitching. We're talking about crosstalk. And the third topic is outside issues. Robert?
Well, here we go. Hey, I'm Robert. I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic. I have been in the program 13 years. I have a recommitted absence of 10 years and 200 days. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. I'm maintaining 40 pounds of weight loss. And I am so grateful. Thank you, Suzanne, for putting this together. Thanks, Pamela, for asking me to be here and be part of this panel. It's something that I've talked to my sponsor about many times about outside issues because it really does throw me in meetings. I do want to just reiterate the three things, if you haven't written them down yet. Am I sharing my own experience, strength, and hope? Does my share strengthen the unity of the group? Does my share help newcomers and those still struggling? Those are the questions we have to ask ourselves when we share. So I started my journey 13 years ago at a place in the valley of Los Angeles. I'd been yo-yoing for, 30-something years since I was a teenager. I did diet pills, diets, starvation, more diets, fen-fen. I miss fen-fen, but don't do it. It'll kill you. Jenny Craig, cleanses. Oh, my God. I was always 50 pounds up, 50 pounds down. It's very strange. I never went up more than 50 pounds. It was always just 50 pounds. I can't tie my shoe without having trouble breathing. I'm going to lose weight. And that was since I was a teen. And then I discovered vomiting. I discovered bulimia through a talk show. How strange. Looking back on that, I knew I was crazy. And that was sort of my journey. Then I was 40. I hit the age of 40. Here's the list of feelings that I had at 40. I was at my rock bottom with food and my addiction. I did not know I was an addict to food at the age of 40. I had self-hate, dark, dark days, lonely, fat. I had medical issues. I was going to have to be on cholesterol medication very soon. There were no more diets in my life. I had used them all, and none of them were working anymore. I remember this, sitting in front of a huge mirror going, I'm going to have to learn how to love that fat, unhappy, sad, lonely man. I see that in the mirror, and I have to figure out how to like what I see. And there was no way it was ever going to happen. I'm only sharing this because it leads up to this part of the program for me. I remember my last all-you-can-eater. It was such a horrific, I had my sweats on, my eating sweats, my eating buddy couldn't go with me, and it was so lonely in that restaurant. The restaurant was full, I had three plates in front of me, and I was the loneliest man in the world. And I remember leaving, going home, and eating at home, and just feeling like complete and utter crap. I was at my bottom. Several days later, I made a phone call to a friend who I had noticed in a year had changed everything about her life, her attitude, her weight, her everything. She just was glowing. And I called her and said, I don't know what to do, and I don't know what you're doing. I'm at my wit's end. I actually use the words compulsive eater because I think I saw it on a talk show. And I said, I'm a compulsive eater. I can't stop eating. What are you doing? I want to know what diet you're doing. And she said, all she said was, you have to meet me at a meeting. So here's the thing. I went to my very first meeting. And I walked in the door, had no idea what I was walking into, and I stayed, and I listened, and for the first time, I heard my story of pain and struggle around food, and it was the first time I had ever heard that from anybody, it's so strange. When you're in this disease, you feel like you're alone on an island and you don't think anybody's going through what you're going through. And I went through years of never thinking that anybody was going through what I was going through. And I knew what I was, when I was sitting there, I got a little emotional. It's just interesting to go back to that, those first days. It's always still right there, but it was the first time I ever heard my story. And I am so grateful for that. I got a sponsor that day and a new life and a new hope for my life. I would never have received or stayed for that gift of this program if I heard shares of Outside Issues and other programs. Taking your 3-minute positive pitch to vent, to complain about work, family, husbands, wives, kids, etc., and then say, but I didn't eat over it, I would never have heard my story. I would have left. Taking 3 minutes to do a pitch about religions or beliefs or other programs, you know, anything other than our addiction, I would have never heard my story in that first meeting. As a newcomer, I did not have a God or a higher power in my first meeting. In fact, I spent most of my childhood hating God for creating a human that was like me. So when, you know, when someone shares specifically about those things and in a very specific way, I would not have heard my story. I would have left. There was a lead I heard once, and thank God that I've been in the program a while, but I heard a lead months ago that was a 10 or 15 minute lead that was truly all about her husband and how whatever they were going through, not one thing about food, not one thing about recovery, and wrapped up with thank you for letting me share, and went on with the meeting, and the rest of the meeting was pretty much in following with what she had shared. And I would never have heard my story in that pitch. I would never have heard my story in that Outside Issue pitch. So I wouldn't have 13 years of recovery, and I thank God I walked into that meeting 13 years ago where recovery was strong and shares were on point. Because as a newcomer who hated himself and my life and God and whatever, 50 pounds up, wanting to vomit it all out, having a dark life, lonely, I would have not stayed had I not heard for the first time my life, my story through the pitches that happened in that room. I had nothing in common with any of those people in that room, but because their pitches were about CEA How and recovery and how it was working in their lives, I stayed. I stayed and was sponsored and have never looked back. I have never forgotten, and I live a life of gratitude now for that gift. I also have a higher power and a God. That word used to make me cringe, and now I embrace it because I understand that it is a higher power and a God of my understanding, and that is why we don't get so specific and so crazy about Outside Issues in these meetings and don't allow it, because there are so many different types of people that walk in that door and need to hear a message of recovery for food. I always, at every meeting, write down a newcomer's name. If I hear a newcomer, I write down the name. I do thank the speaker, and I do thank the newcomer for being in the rooms, because the newcomer reminds me of where I came from 13 years ago. I talked to my sponsor many times about, I'm a forgetful person. That's why I compulsively had eaten all those years. I forgot how horrific it was to be at my bottom. When I'm skinny and cute, I forget how horrible life is when I'm not. So I in these meetings with my shares, try to pay back the gift I was given 13 years ago with trying to share my experience, strength, and hope, and what this program has given me for 13 years. When a leader speaks, I do take what they're talking about, and I put it into my own share and my own experience with it. A speaker can make a subject for a meeting, and you take it and you make it into your own experience with it, or you don't. But outside issues don't help anybody in the meetings, and don't help me, who was a newcomer. And, you know, I will always actually be a newcomer. Every day is new for me. I still am a crazy food addict. And I embrace that every day, because I am so grateful for the 13 years I've been given. So that's really all I wanted to pitch. So I want to leave it open to questions and other things, but I will repeat, there were so many good things said today. I just really want to repeat that, you know, your share is service to the meeting. And those questions that were brought up at the beginning and that I've been repeating over and over, those are what make a happy, healthy meeting. And that is, am I sharing my own experience, strength, and hope? Does my share strengthen the unity of the group, and does my share help newcomers and those struggling? And that's what you ask yourself, and try to build a share around that. And that will help that happy, healthy meeting. So, any questions?
This is Paul from New York, and I'll just briefly share, because there's going to be a lot of people, I'm sure, with questions. In both cases,
Paul, excuse me. We were going to, following the share, first we'll ask the other panelists if they have any comments. Then we'll go immediately to you,
that.
Paul. Thanks. Yeah. Pam, did you have anything to add?
An outside issue would be that I just love Robert's shares. But
stop it.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to say that outside issues, you know, even if they're benign, like if we talk about my favorite sports team, somebody else is going to have a different favorite sports team.
Right.
And that then creates an adversarial atmosphere. And we're not adversaries. We're all there to support each other. So as Robert said, that's why we don't talk about outside issues. You know, we're there. The tradition five is singleness of purpose. And our singleness of purpose is we're all there for the same reason. We're all compulsive eaters. We're not all in AA also. We're not all in Al-Anon also. But we all are there for compulsive eating. And I just wanted to share quickly an experience about outside issues. In one of my meetings, we do fellowship after the meeting. And several years ago, we were doing fellowship, and somebody mentioned something political. And it wasn't that. You know, this was a long time ago. It wasn't that divisive, but it was just mentioned it. And then somebody else said, that's an outside issue. And then somebody said, well, this isn't a meeting. And then we talked about it, and we agreed among ourselves that we would maintain the same guidelines in our fellowship after the meeting that we did in the meeting, because it does divide us. We're going to carry that division into the meeting, you know, and we're all there for fellowship, we're all there in unity, we're all there for the same purpose. So that was a really good experience for me. And That's it. Okay, Paul, go ahead.
Okay, briefly, I want to say that when I did address crosstalk at a meeting, because it was it was interrupting the meeting. The person was interrupting the speaker. The person kept on asking them to speak up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They asked specifically if we could, just read the crosstalk statement briefly, and I was denied and actually got a text like you wouldn't believe, so I stopped going to that meeting. I also then decided the next time to bring it to the business meeting, because the lead who basically led that meeting was embellishing every single share after people spoke, partially because of what's going on in other meetings. That she heard it on a Zoom meeting. She felt, I need to support them, of course, the newcomer period. I just kept going to other meetings, because at that business meeting, I felt like it was a trial. It was me against them. So. Lastly, just to, if we can speak on that or not, the other thing I wanted to talk about is embellishments at the meeting, which happens often when somebody knows or familiar with the other people in the meeting, so they'll call them Miss or Dearest or, Sweetheart, I've heard, and that also is difficult. And also, the need, I guess, because they've not been at a live meeting, to thank everyone, especially when we have readers, that they have to thank the five speakers before them. And I know that's not crosstalk, but it stops the purpose, which is to get to if it's a speaker qualification, if it's about the big book or whatever, it's about that and not about thanking everybody every 2 minutes. So that's my take.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And the thing is, there's no such thing as how police. We can only do what we can do. We take a group conscience. We all adhere to the group conscience. We have in our literature so many times, our only disciplinarian is love. Our love and tolerance of others is our code. But we can't enforce that. And the big book also says, when a person offends us or bothers us, we say, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. That's the anger prayer. There's only so much we can do, and one of them is put the crosstalk guidelines in place, and the other is to remind the trusted servants that they are trusted servants and that their responsibility is to the group. And to place principles before personalities, but that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, I just to add to that too, Paul. I feel you. I've been in meetings like that, maybe not to that extent, but I've certainly felt those feelings and that frustration. What I've always been told too is when they have rotation of service, take the service position, and you can change that meeting by doing that. And I believe that's why we have that rotation, so that different personalities and different people, because we're all so different, can take over positions. So it is frustrating sometimes, and it sounds like you've done what you can, and that's exactly what I would do, is I would start seeking out other meetings. Fortunately, I live in a city that has many meetings. I don't know where you live, but there are some people that don't have that luxury, so taking over service positions and maybe taking positions where you have the ability to bring those things up and change some of those things slowly is the way to go, but it is frustrating, so there's not much we can do about it, but be an example and do more service. So it's not the perfect answer, but there you go.
Yeah, and the phone bridge meetings, as you said, I mean, there are all kinds of phone bridge meetings, so you do have many options. But, yeah, it's not perfect. It's not a perfect world. And none of us are here because we're healthy folk. That's what I always try to remind myself. I'm not here because I'm such a healthy person. Probably that's the case for you as well. I don't know.
And I really also in the thanking people, it sometimes it can get out of hand, but I truly, when I do a pitch, I only thank the speaker because they've given such service. It's a lot of service to speak for 15 minutes to a group and give your story. And I do thank newcomers for being in the room. And that's about it. I don't speak. I don't thank everybody in the room. I don't think that's part of what we do. So that's just a personal thing someone's doing, probably. But it. But I understand your pain.
Pam, do you have any input on that issue?
You know, I don't. I just think that, you know, people are where they are. And, you know, I like the idea of the rotation of service for that very purpose. I like the idea that we can talk to people, you know, outside of the meeting about the issue. And if we have, an issue with one particular person, if you know them well enough, you can say, you know, I really feel like, you know, your pitch, I felt it a little bit of an outside issue. What do you think about that? I mean, and then if they don't see it that way, then that's just their take on it, and I can't change that. I can just suggest, you know. And I do it, you know, I do it with kindness whenever I can. And if I can't do it with kindness, I don't do it. I know that, you know, people are in different places. You know, newcomers are, you know, are raw, and they don't even get the whole flow of meetings and everything. It took me a long time to really understand how everything works, you know, and I made a lot of mistakes, and I, you know, freely admit to that. And, you know, fortunately I had good people that I looked up to, that I went to and who came to me and said, you know, told me when I was, you know, in error. And I sometimes didn't see that, but, I understood their concern. So I, I didn't do that anymore, you know, or whatever. I changed where I felt was necessary. And then I, you know, that was fine. And, again, you can change, you know, find a meeting that works for you if you can. And if you can't, you know, it's about your own recovery. And you just pray for the people that, you know, aren't where you are yet, and or you pray that you can, get, you know, somehow meet them in the middle. Either, you know, it may be we have to look at ourselves in certain issues too, and say, why is this upsetting me? Because it's about me. It's always about us, you know, when we're disturbed. So I try and look at what's my part in this issue, and why is it that it's so upsetting me? And a lot of times I find out it's something from somebody else that has nothing to do with the meeting that I'm perturbed about. And on another day, this wouldn't bother me. So I look at it that way, too.
One thing that I do, and maybe it's like going over the head of somebody in a hierarchical organization, but often if somebody is sharing outside of the guidelines, they do it usually from inadvertence or, you know, unawareness. And I will sometimes, if I know who their sponsor is, I will talk to their sponsor and say, you know, it might be a good idea if you share with your sponsee what is appropriate to share at a meeting and what is not. So I'll often talk to the person's sponsor because the person is probably more likely to listen to their sponsor than to me. So, and also I think it's not a direct confrontation if it comes from a sponsor. So that's something that I have used. Would anybody else like to share their experience in any of these three things? Positive pitching, crosstalk,
Adele.
Or
yes, I would.
Adele,
like to.
Okay. Adele, and then who just said that you would like to after Adele?
Marcia R. Marcia.
Okay, Adele, and then Marcia R.
Thank you.
Okay, Adele, compulsive eater, blame it. On the outside issues, the early part of January, you know, I had told one person that was an outside issue about the January 16th, and she told me that, you know, I didn't tell you to stop sharing about being in the hospital, and, you know, being in the hospital was not an outside issue. You know, I went 4 days without food and yada, 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 and so, you know, so I still have a, you know, I guess I still have a problem with that. And for some reason, they don't understand, I just heard a couple of days ago that they still want to talk about what happened in January. They don't understand how that would tear the fellowship apart because everybody is not of the same party. And so, I get phone calls afterwards, people thanking me for saying, we need to stay neutral. We can't even talk about it. Just even last week and stuff, people wanted to talk about what happened in January. And so I'm still kind of raw with that one, but, something I maybe didn't need to look at within myself. So thank you.
Yeah, and we're all sick folk, but clearly, and in all of the literature, when it talks about outside issues, it specifically references religion and politics. So those clearly are outside issues. You know, that's not as subjective as some other areas are. They are clearly outside issues.
Thank you, Pamela.
Marcia?
Hi, this is Marcia. Yes, I don't know which category this fits into, but it feels to me like crosstalk or calling somebody out. This is something at each lot of the meetings I hear is when we leave our phone number after we share whatever we leave our phone number if we so choose. But if we either do not choose to or forget, either way, calling that person out and saying they've already clicked off on a mute, and then we call them back onto the line, number one, because I always leave my number, but if I forget, I don't want to be reminded that I forgot because it's embarrassing. But not just that. Some people I've heard come back on, some people come back on and just say, I didn't want to leave my number at this time. So to me, that's embarrassing there too. So they may not want to share again if they feel like they're pressured to leave their number. If you forget, leave it at the next meeting or stay after and share it, but to call people out and ask them to me is like forcing them to leave their number. So that's just what I've been on my heart for months, and I didn't know where to take it to. So thank you, Marcia Art Compulsive Eater.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of what Pam just shared about. I always look at something in me. If somebody reminds you, you can just say, I don't want to leave my number. You know, there's no pressure. It's your choice.
Yeah, I agree. It's we have to remember, we're just working our side of the street.
Yeah.
And if you're not ready or you don't want to leave your number, that is up to you. And no one should be coming back to you in any kind of shaming way. And if they do, I would talk to your sponsor and don't shame yourself about that. I don't leave my number everywhere either. Yeah, that is all on them.
And the person who is asking for your number, should, if they do call, they should be saying, did you want to leave your number? And then you can say no. You know, and that's perfectly all right, if they do call. So, and that's on them. If they are giving you a hard time about that, that's on them. That's their issue, not yours.
And maybe they're not giving you a hard time, but you're taking it on,
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that could be too. Yeah, absolutely.
This is Bill. I have one more thing to say. They probably don't do this at face-to-face meeting, but on the phone bridge, they always, some of them say, you can mail your check to so-and-so snail mail. That's an outside issue. How fast the mail move is not part of, not for us to judge. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, I didn't actually understand that, Adele.
Okay, when you're on the phone bridge, we give out the address to where they can send a check to, and some of the leaders will say snail mail, which is judging the post office and stuff, and that's, to me, is definitely an outside issue. And plus, you're talking about somebody's job. Maybe it's a newcomer that just came on, and they work for the post office, and, that's not healthy for me to talk about the post office.
Right.
Yeah, I never thought of snail mail as a derogatory statement. It's just the mail, but I guess it could be derogatory. I don't know. Does anybody else have any, would like to share your experience with any of these issues?
Hi, this is Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much. Catherine, greatly recovering on Kauai, anorexic, bulimic, and compulsive eater. And, I was very touched by, well, a lot of the content today. Thank you. I've learned a lot. But especially by this thing about, I also used to get extremely frustrated about this, what I would call, on my list of character beats, it's kind of people-pleasing, compulsive thinking, taking a lot of time doing that. And that's something that, when I really looked at that spiritual axiom that it's something in me, it was horrifying that my judgment on these people was just so trying to get my projection back onto me. And I think today I do have much more compassion because I have a little trick that I do in the big book that if I have an issue with what might be another where I need to go to an outside place for help additional to see how I run it through that section where it says, it's the now about sex section, but I say it's now about people pleasing or whatever the thing is. And if I can turn it around in my See How program with my sponsor as a result of those few pages, which are very helpful, then that's great. And if I can't, then I probably need some additional outside help. And in that area of compulsive people-pleasing or placating, mostly people-pleasing, I think I would call it, for me, was such a problem of emotional intoxication. And when I did eventually see that I was too powerless over that in myself, thanks to all these people that were triggering me so enormously, finally got it back to me and the admission, then I was able to go to the outside help to get that and for myself, and boy, has that made it easier for me to not be so triggered now in this fellowship about that, because it was such an emotional intoxication for me, but very subtle, because it's sort of culturally, people think it's nice to be doing thank you all the time, and of course gratitude is the main value of my spirituality, but if I'm overdoing it, it's like other good stuff. If it's a compulsion for me, then it's not serving myself or others. And I'm now no longer really triggered by that because I'm doing a lot of work that I need to do around that, of what drives that, and it helps me have more compassion for other people that may be like me in that regard. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. And that's the fourth step in the big book. The pages Catherine is referring to are pages 68 to 70. And that's a good reminder, I think, for all of us. I mean, it's what I do all the time, go back to the steps. So often, if something is really bothering me, I have the 10th step every day, but sometimes it's a little bit deeper than that. I go back to the fourth step. I write it out. What is it? What's the cause? Who is it or what is it? What's the cause? How does it affect me? What's my part? Share it with my sponsor. And then I go to step six, which is what is my character defect around that, which we just heard Catherine talk about. And then seven is I humbly ask to have that character defect removed. So we have so many tools, you know, when and as several people have said this morning, when I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me, and I have so many tools to deal with those issues. I think we have time for one or two more shares.
This is Sheila B. I'd like to share.
Thank you.
I have a question about crosstalk. Is it right for somebody to take something out of the meeting after the meeting's closed and finished and pick up the phone and call somebody and harass them? Is that crosstalk?
I don't
well,
know.
Well, that's not right.
Right, exactly. Is that the person, you know, that's
Sheila,
not the
we need names.
Now that would
we
be awesome.
Need full
no,
name.
No, no, no.
No, that's exactly what, if you read that crosstalk document on the website, you know, it says that we don't give advice and we don't mm-hmm. judge other people. And that's not only in the meeting, but that's
right.
outside of the meeting. It's just not appropriate. You know, and as several people have said this morning, we look at ourselves. We don't look at others. And again,
yeah.
back to the big book, this person is a sick person.
Yeah. I will say
I've
this.
Learned.
It'll happen that someone's going to annoy us in a meeting. We're all human. We're not all going to love each other. And I've had that discussion with my sponsor many times. But I always think about, why am I so disturbed by these people? Why or mm-hmm. this person? Mm-hmm. What is it about me? And I do this a lot. And that's one of the big gifts for me in this program, is that when you do do the steps and you do the work and you take the actions, you start looking. When something disturbs you, certainly for me in the meetings, when something disturbs me, I definitely look at, why am I disturbed about that? Why am I so affected by that? And I have talked to my sponsor many times, and we do laugh about the stupidity of some things that I've heard and really annoyed me.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, in the same breath, talk about, what is it about who I am and what I'm still going through that I need to work on? And that's the great gift that I've gotten from this program, is that, you know, but if they're calling you and yelling at you, there's nothing more powerful than a hang-up.
Mm.
We have
and praying, and praying for them. And praying for them.
And pray, sure. Yeah.
So,
I think,
I just wanted to say one more comment, is that, like, when people are talking about, like, you know, when I lead meetings, I'll always say, you know, if you'd like to leave your number, you know, please repeat it twice, and, you know, and let us know your time zone. And sometimes, I'll be honest with you, for me, I'm just saying for me, in my experience, sometimes people, and I always have to people, made you their talk, and then I said, oh, would you like, because I know the people too, maybe, but I said, would you like to leave your number for outreach, you know? And if people say, no, not at this time, that's fine. It's no big business. To me, it's not an issue. And somebody, a lot of people said, oh, thank you, Sheila, for reminding me, because they get so caught up in sharing, you know, that they forget it. And then they've left their number if they want, you know? So I think you have to look at it as a broadened subject. I mean, I think it's how you say it, which could, to me, makes a difference. You know, whenever time we do anything, how we say it, that makes a difference. Then, you know, well, what do you mean you don't want to leave your number? Well, we need your number. You know, I mean, you can put somebody right down to the floor, you know, to be honest. So I think it's just really one thing we learn, I think, in when we share or whatever we do. I always say, this is my thing, I learned years ago. I mean, I walked in these rooms years ago, and I always remembered, take what you want and leave the rest. Take what you want from the meeting and leave the rest. Leave the rest behind, you know. And that I think is the most important thing we can do. Because then it's like you say, it's judging, and we're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to judge anybody.
Right,
you know?
And we want to just stick to our own side of the street. And
exactly.
If I want to leave my number, I'll leave my number.
I
would take responsibility for that. I don't think I would want somebody to ask me, but we're all different, you know. So,
all right,
we have time for one more.
May I
say,
this is Susie. May I talk about something that was mentioned, but it's very important, and it was mentioned very quickly. Talking about a sponsee, when they could be in the rooms, maybe not listening, but other people may know who you're talking about. A lot of times people know who our sponsees are, and sometimes my sponsor who they are. I had a situation both ways, because I've made a lot of mistakes in 40 years, but once that my sponsor at a meeting, and it was a face-to-face meeting, and she said that her sponsee was having terrible times with the abstinence, and it was me. I was in a very bad relapse, but I told her afterwards, you know something, everybody knew it was me, and I said I felt bad. She never, ever did it again, never. But I made a mistake once, a million times I've made, but 32 years ago, I came into Howe. This was in Howe. And my sponsor was in a room, in a face-to-face meeting, and I went on how this sponsor is fantastic. I didn't mention her name, but everybody
knew. Yeah.
And afterwards, she said to me, never, never do that again. And as you know, and eventually she lost her abstinence, and eventually she died of the disease. It wasn't because of me, you know, saying that. But I learned my lesson not to talk about sponsors or sponsees, because people may know who they are, even if you're saying wonderful things. So thank you for letting me share.
Yeah.
Thanks, Susie. That was really important to reiterate. And even there's no reason for you to be saying wonderful things about your sponsor in a meeting, you know? We're supposed to share our own experience, strength, and hope. So
I don't mind it.
I don't either, Rob.
You can talk about me whatever you want.
You can talk. Do you have anything to say about your sponsor, Robert? Okay.
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Our time is up. We thank you all for letting us be of service today. And Suzanne, back to you to wrap us up.
Yes, just one comment that I didn't get to get in. I have noticed at certain meetings, somebody will start swearing like a trucker, and it sets a tone for the meeting where it's just a spiral. People start cursing, and it sets a tone of negativity. There's that. And the other thing about thanking people, I do thank the reader, but I don't thank, I'm like, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. But I was reminded by someone who has done face-to-face and phone bridge for years. We don't get to see each other here on the phone bridge, so to acknowledge the person is done and to say thank you and move on, it kind of gives a signal like, okay, we're moving on to the next person. But I never thank it someone overly because that's not good. But you know, thank you. Thank you for reading. Thank you for sharing, and move on. But I want to thank Pamela, Pam, and Robert. It was a great workshop. Judgment. Thank you for an informative workshop. An informative workshop that I got a lot out of. I want to invite the panelists to stay on once the recording is on, if they feel comfortable leaving their contact information. But I just want to remind everybody, if you're listening to this live or on the recording, please send in to Someone's Tradition. Please go to cahow.org. Go to meetings and go to Phone Bridge. And at the bottom of the Phone Bridge page, you'll find information to send in a PayPal payment or a check. And once again, I want to thank the panelists for their time and energy. And let's close with the Serenity Prayer. Star 6 to you.
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Courage to gain the things I can.
And wisdom to know the difference.
I will not mind.